Welcome back to Copper Country Today. I'm your host, Rick Allen. And joining me in studio are three people from Michigan Tech. I have Jackie Huntoon, who is the Provost and Vice President for Academic Affairs. Kelly Raffelli, Director of the Center for Director for the Center for Diversity and Inclusion. And Christina Welch, who's a grad student at Michigan Tech. Everybody, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Now, it's been an interesting week. Certainly, since events that have transpired on Michigan Tech, and I don't know if you had to probably be in a hole over the past week to not at least heard something about them. But it brought to light racial tensions at Michigan Tech. And, you know, we've discussed beforehand that what we're going to talk about is the Michigan Tech campus and as a reflection of our community as well, and not so much about legal things going on with this particular case. So just kind of stating that out front, we'll definitely cover that in that arena when it's appropriate. But first, I just want to kind of talk, what is the feeling and climate on campus as we talk?
I think at first it was a little bit in between. I think some people were outraged. Some people thought that we were making a big deal out of nothing. And then it just, I don't know, I think it's starting to die down because people are now so more focused on finals and going home. But at the same time, like, we can't forget until, you know, it's solved.
One of the questions that I asked the assistant director for the Center for Diversity and Inclusion when we were covering this for the news, I said, so, you know, is Michigan Tech facing similar problems as other universities that you'll find in the news, University of Missouri, Yale, they're all over right now in the national news. And I expected the answer to be, oh, no, nothing like that. The answer was actually the opposite. Oh, yeah, we definitely are. So much so that I had to re-ask the question and said, now, do you understand what I'm asking you? I'm asking, do we have racial tensions as bad as some other universities? Yes, I understood the question, and my answer is still the same, was the response. So for me, that was a bit of an eye-opener, because whatever the situation is, we don't always see it. And I think that was proven when the story went on social media about what happened, in that a lot of people blame the media for blowing this out of proportion or causing a problem that wasn't there, for any number of those things. So that's what gave me the idea to do this, to bring in three people who deal with this on the forefront. You can kind of tell me, what is the situation at Michigan Tech? The aftermath of the threat that took place was certainly probably a good place to start. How did it make everybody feel?
Well, for me, it was really devastating. The students who I work with and program for and support were threatened, and I knew that they were frightened and that they consider Michigan Tech to be their home if temporarily, and someone just threatened them and now they don't know what to do. So I was devastated.
I think that kind of sums it up for everybody on campus. So we want all of our students to be safe on our campus, and we want all of our students to feel safe on our campus. And when this threat came out, whether it ends up that it was a joke or not, it was not taken as a joke by anyone when it first came out. We were all very scared by what happened, what someone would say. And it was also a little bit shocking that a member of our Michigan Tech community would even say something like that. So whatever the intended impact was, it had a huge negative impact on a lot of people's lives. The good thing since then is we've started having some conversations about some of these issues that have kind of been flying under the radar for a while. So they've been there, and Kelly has known about a lot of them, but I don't think there's been a lot of awareness on campus about some of the, you might say, minor incidents or microaggressions that occur on an everyday basis to a lot of our students. And, you know, this includes women, underrepresented domestic minorities, international students. And so it's opened up the space for us to have some conversations about how to treat each other with increasing respect moving forward. And so this might have a good outcome in the end.
How does racial tension manifest itself on campus? If it's not overt, then how is it displayed?
Clearly through social media.
Is that it? Really?
Yeah. So the threat happened through Yik Yak. And since then, it's been comments from people such as, oh, you guys are taking this too, you know, seriously. You ruined this kid's life. You did this, you did that. And my feelings are, is that the minute you turn 18, you are responsible for your own actions. You can't say, I didn't know, or whatever, whether it was a joke. You're responsible for your actions. So for one, you can't blame us for anything that we didn't say or we didn't do. And then for the second part of that, you can't get upset with us for taking it the way that we took it, because you have people like us who all we want to do is go home. Like, we want to be able to matriculate through Michigan Tech like everyone else. We want to be able to be seen as a student and a person and not based on our religion or our color or anything like that. We want to be just like everyone else, and we want to be able to prosper and thrive and graduate. So, I mean, and then we also got comments, even when we did the protest, or I'm sorry, the peace march, that from students saying, are you all walking at night because you're black? That, for me, that's complete ignorance. We were walking at night because we wanted to make an impact before the court date the next day. And as you can see, we did. And then whether you wanted to hear our voices or not, or whether you had something to say about it on Yik Yak or whatever, you still heard us. Mm-hmm. You still heard what we had to say. So I just kind of feel like, instead of you speaking it on Yik Yak or anonymous social media, just, you have a voice, use it, you know, say it on Facebook, take responsibility for what you say, take responsibility for your actions.
Prior to the situation last Thursday, what were there other concerns that were going on? Obviously, this brought everything right to the surface and created an emotional environment where people spoke out and some people shown their true colors, both positively and negatively. But prior to that, what was the situation?
So one of my main roles in the Center for Diversity and Inclusion is to be there for students and listen, you know, to issues they're having on campus. And it's not months, it's years. It's the entire time I've been at Michigan Tech. Students are coming and talking to me about the daily microaggression. So it's you know, things people say and little slights and little digs that people say to them that are based on whether they're their gender or their race. And, you know, but the week before this incident happened, several students or a few students on campus attended Halloween parties dressed in blackface, and some others were running around a party with Confederate flags as capes. And this was very hurtful. And students reported these things, and we did address them. And the vice president of student affairs, he sent out a message to the student body, and that had backlash on social media that we were being too sensitive and, you know, get over it type of thing.
Now, Michigan Tech has a Center for Diversity and Inclusion. Many other universities do not,
right.
Especially, you know, some of the ones that have hit the media in the last few weeks. And in places where university presidents have had to resign, you know, over a lot of these things. So what is Michigan Tech's response to some of these things that are put up other than putting out an email?
So some of the stuff that we did first off, when the threat first came out, the president and some of the other senior leadership went that evening to the Center for Diversity and Inclusion and just sat with the students and heard what they had to say and learned more about what was going on campus, so that we all had a better understanding of some of the things that were happening right now and some of the things that had been happening in the past. After that, over the weekend, some of us met with students on Sunday in advance of the Peace March to talk more about their concerns and also some of the action items that they would like to see the administration pursue going forward. And I think it was on Monday morning, many of our alumni, our minority student alumni from the university, sent letters to a lot of the leaders laying out some additional action items. And so the president has charged our University Diversity Council to expand its membership to include more of the faculty leaders as well as students, and then start to systematically address some of these requests. And all of the requests that have been made are completely reasonable, and I think they'll benefit our campus overall. So we are trying to start moving down some of these things and have an action plan going forward. And I think, you know, if you go online and you read what's happening at other campuses around the country, this idea of microaggressions, what we heard from students here at Michigan Tech are exactly the same types of things that students all over the country are saying. So it's very subtle, and it just shows people's preconceived ideas about who someone is based on how they look, and then they react to that person based on those preconceived ideas rather than seeing them as a human being who's an individual. And I think a lot of what the students and the alumni are asking for is for us to become more aware of what our preconceived ideas are, so that rather than act on those, we maybe can self-edit our responses to people and be more human overall.
An attorney was trying to recently explain to me how some of these tensions can boil over. And the way he put it was, said, imagine if you went to a place where very few people look like you, your faculty don't look like you, the police don't look like you, the judge doesn't look like you. You would inevitably would feel as if, you know, you're alone, you know, and you would see things as always working with little consideration for you. And shortly after that, was the first time I ever came, you know, really to try to understand what the term of white privilege meant. Because I know if it's brought up in conversation, people get angry. Mm-hmm. They don't want to, you know, they don't even want to understand what it is. And so I had to do some research to try to understand. It's not about feeling guilty for being white. Mm-hmm. It has to do with, you know, that environment that is, you know, our, you know, the society we have, which is largely caters to the majority.
Right.
And how, if you're not in that majority, things look a whole lot different to you. Is this manifested in Michigan Tech at all with the student body?
Yeah.
Christina's nodding her head, so I would love to hear your thoughts on it. Don't be afraid. This is an open forum, you know, and I want to hear your thoughts.
I think that largely applies to Michigan Tech because the African American students are, 1.1%? And then if that, and then like you have Native Americans, who the percent is probably equivalent, if not smaller, and then you have Hispanics, who, you know, we're small.
The total domestic minority percentage is 0.67%.
And about how many students?
7,000.
7,000.
So, 7,000 students total at Michigan.
Yeah, so it's about 7,000 students total. So, you're talking a few dozen.
Right.
Students. Mm-hmm. Now, if you include the international element, the number jumps up.
Right.
And then also a lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and questioning community who are also find themselves victims of these types of things from time to time. Now, in other universities, as we've seen heads of universities resign. We've seen large-scale protests. Has Michigan Tech done enough to address these problems, or is it now going forward?
I think it's now going forward. I think that there's been, just in my inbox, there's been a tremendous outreach from faculty side of the fence, saying, what can we do? How can we be involved? And I personally want to grasp that momentum and carry it through. The students are putting together an open forum on December 2nd to talk about this on our campus. And I'm hoping to carry that through. Moving forward, every month, having these types of open discussions on campus about issues that are facing our student body, particularly in regard to minority students or marginalized populations. I think trainings and dialogues and lots of conversations are on the horizon for sure.
And I think all of these things are really important parts of an overall education for our students, because when you live here in the Houghton area, that's great. It's one sort of culture. It's a very nice place to live for many of us. And when you go out into the bigger world, it's very different. And so it's really important for all of our students to be aware of all of the different cultural norms that they may have to interact with when they go out into the working world, and be prepared to be sensitive and deal with coworkers who come from very different backgrounds. So even though some people might think this isn't important for students' education, I would say that it is very important, because in order to be a well-rounded person who can prosper in whatever job environment they end up holding, you need to be aware of some of these issues and be able to interact with respect with all different types of people.
Yeah, I think it's extremely important. You know, I love American history. I love studying history. And when I've looked back, I've seen three opportunities that our country had to get over the hump, to really be what we would want to be, which is we are all Americans. One of those opportunities was during a revolution. I mean, to not that it could be made up for, but to end the mistake and sin of slavery. All men are created equal. Well, they weren't, not under our Constitution. After the Civil War, after so much blood was shed, to say, okay, let's put that behind us. But instead, many states enacted laws to basically relegate many of our citizens to second class. And then the third one, this might be a little different, but it was through baseball. You know, when Jackie Robinson came, he was probably about 75 years too late, because baseball was starting to be played in 1840s, I believe, is when it came out. I know Civil War soldiers were playing baseball to pass the time. Yet so much racism was instituted in the sport that by the time Jackie Robinson came along, it had never even been a rule. It wasn't a rule that black players couldn't play. It's just the owners would not bring one in. So it's, you know, I look at those three things and it makes me very upset at our forefathers for making those mistakes and not having one giant group of people with, you know, celebrating our cultural differences, but not having this inequality. We seem to be in those rough seas again because of so many things coming up. And if this is causing a lot of people to readdress this, then, you know, maybe it's something that we can learn from as we go forward.
You know, last night someone said to me in a meeting I was in that in the Civil Rights era, black folks then were fighting for a seat at the table. But today, minorities are fighting systematic oppression. And it's the oppressions that are built into our systems that came out of, you know, the Jim Crow era and you know, the prison to pipeline. I mean, you know, the pipeline to prison epidemic, where there's more minorities are charged with crimes over white people, and, you know, the lack of quality education and all of these different things. And that's, you know, that carries through to the college campus, and that's what our students are fighting. It's the systemic oppression, and that's what they're trying to bust through.
Well, it's very difficult for somebody who doesn't, you know, deal with this on a day-to-day basis to understand. I do not know what it's like to wonder if I'll not get a job because of the color of my skin, or that if I'm pulled over by a police officer, and I love our police officers, but I don't have to wonder if I'm going to be treated any differently in, you know, behind the wheel because of the color of my skin. I don't have to wonder when I'm filling out an application and it asks me what's the color of my skin, if the color of my skin is going to be a detriment to getting a job or getting approval for a mortgage or anything like that. You know, that is things that we take for granted. I don't have to worry about being in a classroom at Michigan Tech wondering if I'll be treated differently than the other 29 students in the class because of the color of my skin. Perhaps that makes me a bad person to talk about it, but really for me, it's coming face to face to try to understand something that doesn't come natural to me. And I think if more people would do that, you know, we might not have had the situation we had a week ago.
And I think what you said, not that you need to feel guilty about it, but you need to recognize it and own it and say, okay, I do have these privileges that are awarded to me based on, you know, being white. So what can I do with that privilege? How can I help to break down those systems? How can I help to change those systems instead of just pretending or denying that they exist?
What is the answer to those questions? How can it be done? How does the average person do something about it?
I think something simple anyone can do is when they witness microaggressions or they witness things happening, they shut them down. They just engage people in a conversation. Why do you think that? Why would you say that? What makes you believe that? Let's talk about it. And not always looking to the victim of those microaggressions to be the person to provide the answer. So being an ally and saying, let's have a discussion why what you said could be potentially offensive, or even checking yourself. I do this for a living, and I'm always checking myself. I'll say something and be like, I really need to rethink what I just said. That was inappropriate. And I'll say, I apologize. Or maybe tomorrow I'll come back and say, you know, I thought about what I said. That probably wasn't the best thing I could have said. I'm sorry for that. Mm. I don't need to make a big deal about it, but I own it and I move on and I learn from it.
Mm. What about anger? Because anger is making things difficult to have conversation. But I certainly would understand the anger from the Black community. I have a harder time understanding the anger other than rationalizing it from a white person's standpoint that they just, you know, they don't want to face this. And if you keep bringing something up that somebody doesn't want to talk about, they just get mad. And that's a way of dealing with it, I guess. But, it can, you know, does the anger need to come out?
Okay. So I think it's a common misconception that Black people are always angry. We're not angry. If you want to have a conversation with us, and as long as the conversation goes respectfully, we don't mind talking to you. We don't mind answering your questions. All I ask is that if you ask me a question, do it because you really want to know and not because you want to be ignorant. And then at the same time, I feel like any two people can have a conversation if you're patient, if you're respectful, if you take the time to hear the other person's ideas, and that if you go into it with an open mind. If you have a conversation with me and you already know how you feel or what you want to say or whatever point you want to get across, then the conversation is pointless because you're going to be stuck in your ideas. You're not going to want to hear anything that I have to say. And then you're going to, at the end of it, you're going to think, oh, you're just some angry Black girl. I'm not angry. So,
and yet some anger might be justified, right? Because someone said basically, I want to kill you, and that made you afraid. And if someone said that to me and made me afraid, and then I found out later that they meant it as a joke, I might be angry that someone would make a joke like that at my expense.
I mean, yeah, because it's like, at what point does threatening anyone's life become a joke or become anything that you can laugh about? Like, for me, it's not a joke because it's like I had to call my parents and say, this is what's happening in my school. So if at any point you don't hear from me, or if at any point you receive a phone call, this is why. Like, at no point is it a joke. It will never be a joke. It will never be something that I laugh at, even if it wasn't the Black community or the Hispanic community or any community that was threatened. Any person threatening anybody's life is not at any point funny. Right.
Yeah. Is there a solution?
That's a good question. Yeah. I think there is a solution. I think conversation would be a good solution, and being open about it is a solution. And then just more so, more than anything, just understanding, like understanding why we did the peace march, understanding why we were so upset, instead of saying, oh, well, you guys just took it out of proportion and you did this or that. Like, just be open and be open-minded and be willing to hear what we have to say, and then try to understand how it feels. Like, try to put yourself in my shoes. That is, I believe that's the first, like, start of that process.
Right. Practice empathy. Yep. Right?
Yeah, and I think something Kelly said earlier about modeling good behavior, so that if something happens in front of you, particularly for our faculty and staff, don't just let it go, but actually take that opportunity to say, hey, let's think about what just happened and work through it and see how that made some people feel. Because a lot of times things happen really quickly and we let them go. And by just letting them go, we kind of give our tacit approval. And by modeling that it's not right, that we don't approve, we might be able to make some small changes that would go a long way.
Right. You're never too old for teachable moments. Like, when we, if you interact with children, every opportunity, you always take a teachable moment with children because they're children and you want to make sure they're teaching them well. But that doesn't magically end when you turn 18. I mean, we all need, we don't know everything. So, you know, utilize those opportunities, if you feel comfortable, to, you know, for teachable moments, to at least open the dialogue.
And that's what I hope people will see too, is, you know, I think in our society we've accepted a certain level of racism, a certain level of oppression that's okay, and it's not. And it's coming to realize that, you know, things that have long been quote unquote accepted, whether they're in comedy or Halloween mm-hmm. costumes, or, you know, guys around a water cooler that, you know, whisper jokes to each other. They think, oh, you know, as long as nobody hears this, we're okay. No, it's not okay. I mean, there really are people that are hurt by this kind of activity. And I may have to go back and read it, but I believe that that's not what the country was about. It was about all of us being able to share in the great things that are available through this country, share them, you know, equally and hopefully in some level of harmony. That's what I would want to see, to address, people that say that white people have a privilege. Perhaps we do. But I think the answer is, let's make this privilege available for everybody. Let's bring everybody up. You know, we don't need to tear people down. Let's bring everybody up so that we can all, you know, have a slice of the pie. There's plenty around to go, everybody, after all the emotions are spent. I want to thank you all for coming in today. I know that in 25 minutes, we can't solve, even this problem. But let's just hope that it's one of those small steps in many that get us from where we've been to where we're going.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Copper Country Today, we'll be right back.